making annual reports. As you know, we serve in more than one committee usually, so that really hits hard on our resources here. But nevertheless, we can always continue with our business. So without wasting time, I think we will do the usual way to introduce ourselves to one another, because I see so many unfamiliar faces at that side. So it would, I'm sure, be useful to know one another. I'll start from my desk here. I'm Ngabangobo, the Chair of Science and Technology. And then I have my secretary, Shanaz, committee secretary. And I have the researcher there, Renee. And then, I don't know where the assistant secretary has gone to. There is also the assistant secretary. But so this is my staff. If there is anything that you need about the committee, these are all the people that are there to beef up the support system. I'll give members so that you can hear also their voices. They are very nice, so that they can introduce themselves and hear their nice voices. I'll start here from our chief. He's the chief of his nation there in Eastern Cape, so he's a real chief, Ingos. So here I sit with Ingos, so there. Over to you, Ingos.
Ingos, otherwise advocate. Mwendo Nongonyana, coming from the OAT Aboriginal of the Eastern Cape, the deployee of the ANC in this committee, I'm a member.
Unfortunately, there are no Ingoses who are female. But on a more serious note, I'm Lira Tunjwa, the whip of the portfolio committee. I'm coming from the Eastern Cape. I'm a member of the Afghanistan Congress.
Good afternoon. My name is Marion Shin. I'm from the Democratic Alliance.
I think it's over to you there in the front. It's over to you, CEO, your delegation.
Okay. I'll introduce myself and allow them to introduce themselves. My name is Dr. Ole Shisana, and I'm the CEO of the Human Sciences Research Council.
I'm Peter Pedler, Deputy CEO, Operations and Capacity Enhancement, HSRC.
I'm Dr. Themba Masilela, Deputy CEO for Research, HSRC.
Dr. Vijay Reddy, the Executive Director for the Education and Skills Development Program.
I'm Professor Labadarius, Dimitri Labadarius, the Executive Director of Population Health, Health Systems and Innovation in the HSRC.
Good afternoon. I'm Professor Lagnus Simbai. I'm the Executive Director of a program called HIV-AIDS, STIs, and TB.
Good afternoon. I'm Professor Vasu Reddy, Acting Executive Director of the Human and Social Development Program in the HSRC.
My name is Julian Jacobs, Director of Communication, HSRC.
Thank you very much for that introduction. Without wasting time, I give over to your CEO presentation about your annual report. I think I understood that there was some mistake or problem with the report here, which you corrected one page which was missing. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, Chairperson. I just wanted to say that we have added a couple of slides that have to do with the books that were published, and we have circulated, I hope they were circulated, the presentation. That is the updated presentation. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology. We want to start by saying to you that we are inspired by humanity and driven by our passion to make a difference for humankind. That's why we are called the Human Sciences Research Council, and our logo is social science that makes a difference. We touch the lives of many, many people on a daily basis, empowering them with knowledge, though you might say that the kind of work we do is an intangible asset, you know, knowledge, but it's vital to the functioning of our society. 2010 and 2011 has been a very interesting year for us, and it's been challenging, but also very exciting. Who's going to forget that we had the 2010 World Cup, you know, last year? In so many ways, we're able to build a nation, and visitors came in to South Africa from all over the world. It was a year in which there was a major problem with regard to global economic downturn, which also affected very much the funding streams for research in our organization.
Why don't you mention also a very breaking occasion where we had for the first time in the African soil, the Astronautical Congress of the World coming here? Why are you not mentioning, why only World Cup?
Thank you, Chairperson, for reminding us, you know, of that. In the interest of time, I probably should move on and accept your intervention as an acknowledgement of the fact that it was a very important event indeed for the country. We, because of the global economic crisis, we had to become more creative and innovative in managing our limited resources. And thanks to the Department of Science and Technology, which actually came forward with an increase in our budget, as you will see at a later point. Our vision is articulated there, but basically we serve as a knowledge hub for research-based solutions in order to inform the human and social development, not only in our country, but also across the continent and across the world. So in a sense, we are making an impact, you know, beyond the borders of South Africa. Our mission is that we are a research organization which advances social sciences and humanities for public use. That's why you are seeing all the faces that are there, that we're hoping that, you know, people are going to be using the information that we are producing, that we have. Now, there's been new developments over the last year. The first one is that we had a new board that was appointed. And this board was appointed towards the end of 2009. And you all remember, Honorable Members, that we had difficulties in terms of getting board members through the process, you know, of Parliament and the executive. But eventually, we have a new board. And the latest two were appointed not very long ago, and we still have one board member who has to be appointed in the area of finance, And then we also had a resignation of one of the board members, you know, who is from Africa, and he had to take on a position in Ghana because the president of Ghana had appointed a person to be in charge of another responsibility. So we do have a vacancy that needs to be filled. We also restructured the HSRC, and that is why this year when I come in front of you, I do have a deputy CEO responsible for research, Dr. Themba Masilela here, as well as Mr. Peter Pedler, who is responsible for operations as a deputy CEO. So that was one of the restructuring that we had to do because the workload was just unbearable. We've reconfigured our research programs in order to align the organization's research units, you know, with the national priorities in the country. We had to realign our existing units or create new units that support the strategic imperatives. And of course, we also had to undergo, you know, the review of the HSRC. But in terms of realigning our existing units, we created a new unit called the Research Use and Impact Analysis, which is called the REA program, which falls under the Deputy CEO. And it's looking at the issues of data preservation. As you recall, our Act requires that, you know, we preserve data for use. So that unit will be fulfilling that mandate. Secondly, it looks at the policy-relevant science communication. The Minister has always been saying that we need to communicate our information a lot better. And indeed, we now are focusing on this issue of science communication. And then, of course, the issue of research dissemination is something that will be looked at, you know, by this particular unit. And finally, that particular unit is supposed to be supporting the monitoring and evaluation program, you know, of the presidency and also of the entire, you know, government. In terms of the Act, the mandated objectives of the organization are to promote human science research of the highest quality so that we can improve the understanding of social conditions and processes of social change, and to engage in research and collaborate research network in Africa, in South Africa, Africa, and globally. We need to focus on pressing social issues which are relevant to human welfare and prosperity, and that is part and parcel of what is in the HSRC Act. For this reason, we have a very important strategic objective which we have outlined in our strategic plan of the HSRC. That is to have addressed the key priorities facing our country through its research and to have generated new knowledge that helps us understand the social and human environment in which we live. Let me say to you that over the last year, the HSRC undertook more than 150 projects and also did an assortment of other initiatives in the area of social sciences and humanities. Our intention was really to provide evidence-based knowledge and data to inform implementation. And we undertook research that really can be grouped into 7 thematic areas, which is democracy and governance in society, education and training, healthcare and health systems, poverty, food security and social exclusion, science for society, world of work, and young people in focus. Now I move on to the area of meeting the mandate of the HSRC. The first one is to inform the effective formulation and monitoring of policy, as well as to evaluate the implementation thereof. To this end, we published 5 policy briefs. One looked at the energy security. You know, the policy brief was titled South African Crude Oil Import Portfolio Risks. And the second one was development challenges, focused on development challenges, and the title was Decisive Actions to Achieve the Millennium Development Goals. As you know, that those are supposed to be met by 2015. And the next one was on quality education, which looked at gender inequality in the mathematics and science school curriculum. And the fourth one was on food security, which the title was The Gender Dimensions of Food Security in South Africa. And the final one was on skills development, the title being Women's Participation in Industrial Science, Engineering and Technology. Continuing to look at the mandate of the HSRC in terms of policy, our researchers are closely involved with the work of the presidency in terms of informing a research-based approach towards government-wide monitoring and evaluation. And in addition to that, we undertake a survey which was funded by the Department of Science and Technology to undertake research and development, you know, survey, which informs the strategy and policy formulation of the department and also monitoring of the progress against the targets that the department has set for itself. Another mandate that we are required to meet is that of dissemination, and we are required to stimulate public debate through effective dissemination of fact-based research results, and we use several approaches to do that. One is publication of the HSRC review. Here, we are glad to say more than 6,000 copies of each edition in printed or electronic format was distributed to you, honorable members, to heads of national and provincial government departments, to donor agencies, to embassies, to academic institutions, to schools, to journalists, as well as to our staff at the HSRC. We also have had a lot of press releases, the value of which was very high. In other words, if we went out to advertise, we would have paid 81.5 million rand, and we didn't, but we simply issued a press release, and that continues to be high year after year. We also had another means of distributing information, that is through free downloads. And here I would like to say that the readership for online HSRC publication really is covered in many, many countries. 200 countries are actually receiving the information coming in from the HSRC. We often have public seminars, and here we bring in, you know, high-profile scholars, policymakers, the diplomatic corps, public intellectuals. We bring those people to come and unpack some of the key societal issues so that they can be able to inform, you know, the general public on that. We also try to meet our mandate insofar as building research capacity. We provided opportunities for 37 masters and 28 PhD level interns, as well as 18 postdoctoral fellows. And they came to the HSRC to get training in order that they can become scientists, or they can be absorbed into parliament or to government or to universities. So we grow our own timber, but we also make sure we share our timber with other institutions. We signed a memorandum of understanding with some of the universities and government departments, and we shared also information with them about the information in the libraries so they can come and use our infrastructure as part and parcel of research capacity building. We also published research and made it available to 50 universities, and also made these universities are located in the rest of Africa, and we used the e-granary digital library to transmit the information, you know, to universities in Africa. And our researchers participate in training workshops with counterparts, you know, in our country as well as in other parts, you know, of the world. One of the mandates the HSRC has to meet is that of collaborating with a variety of institutions. We do collaborate with international development agencies such as the World Bank, UNAIDS, and WHO. We collaborate also with international higher education institutions such as Emory University as an example, and many, many others. I could go on and give a list. We collaborate with international research NGOs, such as Codestria, for example, which is based in Dakar. We collaborate with regional and international research networking organizations, such as the Social Aspects of HIV/AIDS Research Alliance, which is commonly called SAHARA. We collaborate also with the South African government departments at national and provincial as well as local levels. There are many departments that we work with closely, DST, health, education, COCTA, you know, justice, and we could go on and on and on indicating the number of departments that we actually collaborate with. We also collaborate with South African higher education institutions such as University of Cape Town, University of Stellenbosch, University of Limpopo, Fort Hare, Tshwane, you know, technology. Another area which is critical for us that's required by the Act of HSRC Act is to work with the vulnerable and marginalized groups. Some of the work that we do there is focusing on HIV and AIDS in rural communities, including community-based intervention projects in Sweetwaters, which is located in the Pietermaritzburg area, close to Pietermaritzburg area in KwaZulu-Natal. And we also undertook some research in Mthatha in the Eastern Cape, you know, where we even opened an HSRC office there to be able to undertake the research there and work with communities. We also conducted research on sustainable and safe water provisioning to communities in the Eastern Cape. One of the mandates that we have, as I indicated earlier, is that we must make our data sets available to a broader, you know, public so they can be able to reanalyze the information or use it for whatever purpose. So we have free access to Human Resource Development Data Warehouse, and the results from our R&D survey are available at the HSRC website, which is indicated in the document that you have. We have curated some 17 data sets. Take an example of the Social Attitude Survey. If you go to that particular website, you'll see a number of data sets that start from around 2003 on Social Attitude Survey. And you can be able to download that if you have someone, you know, who is a researcher in Parliament to understand a variety of issues that may be of concern to your own constituency or to the nation. Our work is very much aligned to national priorities. If you look at the 2009 medium-term strategic framework, you'll see that the HSRC is involved in all of those. You start with education. We've got the education science and skills, education science and development, and the HSD program, Human and Social Development Program, that's focusing on education. You go to health, you'll find that the HIV/AIDS and STI program is involved in one way or the other. And then also the population health, PHSI, population health, is also involved in the health area. In the area of rural development and land reform, we have got those two programs, economic performance development and the democracy and governance and service delivery program is also involved. And in creating decent work, we do have the economic performance development involved as well as education, science, and development program involved. And then, skills, education and skills development involved. And then on fighting crime, we do have those two programs, you know, also involved. And we also undertake research on humanities, you know, at the HSRC. There are a number of studies that we've looked at, and if anyone would like to know more about that, I'm sure we'll be able to deal with that. We do have an HSRC press that also disseminates information, and I just want to share with you the 10 top bestsellers, you know, from the HSRC, and they are listed there, but I'll take you through each one of the books. The first book that you have, the Inside Indian Indenture. Basically, this particular book is a South African story that looks at the period 1860 to 1914. The book substantially revises the contours of South African Indian historiography and weaves the themes of religious and cultural expressions and looks at power relations, weapons of resistance, and forms of collaboration into the mainstream Southern African studies. As you can see, it's written not necessarily by the HSRC, but it's published by the HSRC. So that is what we're sharing with you. The next book and they're in order of, you know, importance, and in this case is the Education and Poverty Reduction Strategy book, which interrogates the link between education and poverty reduction and highlights the role of cross-sectoral coordination and policy coherence in breaking the poverty gap. The next one that we want to look at is Growing Up in the New South Africa, with a subtitle of Childhood and Adolescent in Post-Apartheid, you know, Cape Town. It's a rich technographic research in one area of Cape Town, and it uses quantitative analysis, and the book explores how the end of apartheid affected the experiences of South African children and adolescents across historically divided, you know, communities in Cape Town. The next one is Trade Unions and Party Politics, Labor Movements in Africa. This is the book that won the International Labor History Association Book of the Year Award for last year. This seminal work examines the political role of trade unions in seven African countries and the ways in which they influence political powers and the state. The next book that we just are projecting on the screen is Constructing a Democratic Developmental State in South Africa, Potentials and Challenges, which is a book that has been edited by one of our staff. It's a really important collection, an interdisciplinary team of international scholars that came into the HSRC and gave their presentations, and they looked at a whole number of issues in terms of how South Africa could go about building a democratic developmental state using conceptual models and comparative case studies from other countries. The book is very authoritative and comprehensive in its investigation on fundamental issues of economic and political, you know, development. The next book, The Race to Transformation, it takes stock of sports in South Africa and provides a pioneering exploration of how sports reflect matters such as enduring inequality, racial transformation, and the making of common national destiny. It's an important book, and of course, such books obviously, you know, does raise some technical debates and some contestations. The next one is The Struggle of Land in Africa, looking at conflict, politics, you know, and change. It looks at the role of land as a place and a source of conflict, especially with regard to policy development, crisis management, and reconstruction, offering important insights into the causes of land issues and the nature of policy making at the national level across the broader Africa. We also prepared a book edited by staff at the HSRC called The Zuma Administration. And this is a collection of essays from varying perspectives, rigorously engaging with the issues facing the South African government, and focuses on the micro-mechanics of governance. And the study provides a view into the current and future responsibilities that must be taken care of by the administration. The next one is actually a book that focuses on the legacy of the 2010 Football World Cup called Development and Dreams. It considers the effects of the South Africa hosting the 2010 World Cup and provides an interdisciplinary perspective on the probable consequences and benefits, including the economy of South African cities and the projection of African culture and identity. And the last one, it's titled Gender Modernity and Indian Delights, and it looks at the Women's Cultural Group of Durban from 1954 to 2010. And through a blend of scholarly rigor and compelling biography, this book reveals how a group of women who were excluded from political and customary power forged a vibrant citizenship and the lives of themselves. And in this case, it looked at them in terms of both of them as agents of their own community and in terms of making of the South African modernity. Now I come to a section on performance, going away from the academic component, but looking at the performance of the HSRC. I suggest you use the slide that I've given you because you'll be able to see the numbers. Oh, actually, you can see the numbers there. Let me say that of the 9 indicators that were there, we have been able to meet some, and we've not been able to meet others. In terms of peer-reviewed publications, we set ourselves a target of 1.5 and we've been able to meet that target. In terms of African research fellows, out of the 10 that we're supposed to get, we're only able to appoint 7. And that has to do much more with the challenges of Africans leaving their own countries to come here for a longer period, which means that we have to change the way in which we recruit them, not to bring them here for too long, because they do have businesses they are running beyond their teaching responsibilities. We've been able to exceed our targets insofar as recruiting masters in 10 and hiring them and developing them at the HSRC. We also have been able to exceed our target in terms of getting their PhD in 10 to come in and be developed at the HSRC. But we're unable to achieve our target insofar as postdocs. We're short by 2. So on the next slide, we have worked hard to preserve the data sets, and we've overshot our target, you know, by more than 2 out of the 7, you know, that we were supposed to achieve. In fact, we're supposed to achieve 7, but we've gone all the way to 16 data sets that were actually preserved and curated. In terms of the percent of senior African researchers that we need to hire the HSRC, we are at 41%, and we've made quite good progress, even though we did not achieve, you know, this target. It's very difficult to get senior African researchers because we've got to develop them before we can actually have them. They're in short supply, you know, in the country. In terms of extra-parliamentary income, we nearly met it, you know, 48 and 47%, but, you know, still for all, it wasn't adequate to be able to do what we needed to do. And in terms of multi-year grants, which are usually international grants, we're not able to achieve that. We're at 34% as opposed to 46%, you know, percent. So we missed the target by quite a wide, you know, margin. As I indicated earlier, what we need to do is to train our scientists so that we are able to recruit them and ensure that the HSRC is staffed by people who are highly qualified. I'm pleased to say that through our program, we essentially have been able to ensure that the largest group of, that the HSRC has got people who have PhDs. So in other words, most of our staff have PhDs, meaning that they've been trained adequately to be able to undertake research. And we did so and succeeded even in increasing the number of Africans recruited to the HSRC to almost all of them have a PhD. And with respect to females, we have more females with PhD than males. And that reflects the pool that is available out there. Coming now to revenue analysis for the year ending 31st of March 2011. Let me say that for the first year that we've been at the HSRC, I think from 2002, if I'm not wrong, we now have a larger increase of parliamentary grant. Actually, I'm wrong, because in 2002, I think our external income was around 6%. But once we started increasing our, you know, extra parliamentary income, we tended to exceed what the government actually is giving us. And we're pleased with the fact that in 2010-2011, 53% of our income actually came in from the Department of Health through, I mean, Department of Science and Technology through parliamentary grant. And we really appreciate, you know, the support that we've been getting from DST. 39% of the income we generated externally through research, and that's less than we normally generated, you know, in other years, you know, for research. And of course, we have 8% of other income, and that other income comes in from the rental, from the cafeteria, you know, and so forth. If you look at our income statements, you will see that we have been increasing our external income and having very, very little surplus or deficit, meaning that whatever amount of money that we got, we were actually able to use it. So our absorption capacity is very high. And it's no surprise, because most of the people that we're hiring as senior scientists actually have the skills to be able to do what they need to do. I must say 2010, 2011, we actually did not do as well as we normally do. And I've indicated that part of that problem is the global economic crisis. And you can see that much more clearly in the next slide, where we're looking at the research earnings. And you can see that the PG, the parliamentary grant and ring fence funding, continue to go high, you know, on a long-term, you know, basis. But when you look at the contracts and grants from external income, we see that it's actually going down. And much of that, you know, is the international funding environment that has actually caused a decline. But I'm happy to say that we now, in this current financial year, are in a better footing, far better footing, in terms of international funding than we were when the global economic crisis was at its worst. So that is encouraging. So next time when we come to present to you, you'll be able to see the big increase that we have already. In conclusion, members of parliament, I want to say that it's been a very hectic year for all of us, but I'd like to say it was a very good year, you know, for us, despite the challenges, you know, financially. We have been able to implement the new strategic plan, and we've now come together and we've got some new indicators, and we have been able to implement them. We have had a restructuring of the HSRC, which led to realignment, repositioning, and also to the appointment of our DCO. We had some challenges, obviously, in terms of performance. You know, performance reporting was a problem. We have some challenges with regard to internal controls, as you have seen in the annual report. And we addressed many of them with the support from the board of the HSRC, as well as the Auditor General. We have an unqualified audit, which we have maintained since 2003 when we came in. We've always had unqualified audit. We may have matters of emphasis, but we do have, you know, unqualified audit. And taking into account the challenges of the global context, there were challenges and opportunities that I've indicated in terms of the global economic crisis, but the upside in terms of World Cup, as well as the Astronomy Congress. And we also, you know, felt very proud, you know, as South Africans, as we hosted the World Cup. But despite some of these challenges, the HSRC remained true and committed to its mandate, as I've already indicated, as well as the strategic objective. We stayed on course. We have supported, you know, the nation, the continent, as well as the, you know, global world. And we do believe that we've provided information that is going to help us to understand a deeper, you know, the issues that are facing us, some of them which are picked up by the census, but we go even a little bit deeper. I'd like to thank you very much for taking time to listen to our report. Thank you, Chairperson and members of Portfolio Committee.
Thank you very much, Dr. Shisan. I'll allow members to interact with you without wasting time, because we see behind us there is another team of presenters waiting to present. So, Honorable Shin.
Thank you very much. I have a whole pile of questions based on the annual report. Let me say that I think that one of your first targets for next year should be to at least produce one annual report that is without error. This is the third annual report that we've had from the HSRC in this committee's lifetime. The 2008-2009 report had to be reprinted because there were errors in the financial statement. Last year, I pointed out errors that were put down to typographical errors and were apparently then corrected on the website, where you added, you know, three noughts to a figure, so irregular expenditure went from a couple of hundred thousand to a couple of hundred million. And now we've had this report reprinted again. This is an expensive operation to change one figure here, which again, this time you left off the noughts. So where 3 million became 3,000. Now you've reprinted the whole document to add the noughts. I think that is, it says something an awful lot about the seriousness with which you address your annual report. Then there's a whole pile of things in here. The fact that you've missed so many targets, and I think that you're actually being rather glib in blaming it on the international global crunch and all that sort of stuff. You've missed your external research income target. Now, is that because external people aren't funding you anymore, aren't giving you contracts anymore? Perhaps there are questions around the quality of the research that you're giving them, that they're not giving you new work. You can't ensure the financial stability is one of your other missed targets. Research grants is missed. Research fellows from Africa is missed. And maybe you address that by saying that they prefer to stay at home. Maybe we could actually look at why that is. Insufficient research associates appointed. Senior researchers not appointed. Multi-year grants, you failed to secure some of those. Then if we go to page 108 and 109, where we talk about the second part, ensuring that, just the second part, endeavoring to develop new partnerships. CEO and director visited the USA in November 2010. You also went to China last year to accept the international head of the social sciences group. Yet nowhere, if we look at, let me find it again, in the financial statements, there's a column that says amount spent on travel. It's absolutely blank. Who funded your trips to China and the US last year? Because this information is that's on page 172. Zero money spent on travel for the executive and the board in 2011. I don't believe a word of that. That is materially incorrect. Then we go to, if I can go then to page 129, discontinued activities. What happened to PACE? Was there last year? It's not there yesterday. Also, the integration of four units into two separate units. That's not mentioned either. Then we go to page 131, where you have the irregular expenditure. regular expenditure of 16,813,000. Well, sorry, 16.8 million. I'm told that that figure should be closer to 18 million. I'd like to know your explanation of that. And if you have a look at all the other things on this page, point number 13, reported performance against predetermined objectives not consistent with the strategic plan. Actual achievements with regard to 94% of all planned indicators were not included in the report. Point number 15, selected objectives, valid performance, do not exist for 56% of the indicators. Point number 18, the content of the strategic plan is incomplete. Point number 19, the validity of the reported performance against indicators could not be confirmed as no supporting source information was supplied. And let's turn over to page 133. Expenditure management. The accounting authority did not take effective appropriate steps to prevent irregular expenditure. Leadership. The accounting authority did not ensure adequate monitoring controls over compliance. Point 23. The accounting authority does not exercise adequate oversight responsibility on performance reporting, compliance with laws and regulations over expenditure. Point number 24. Performance reports are not reliable and supported by reliable and accurate information. Point 25, lack of controls over IT systems. Governance, risks relating to performance information are not adequately monitored. You know, this is a litany of failed performance. There are other things as well that I could go on to. Oh yes, we also have bad debts written off. 4 million rand, I think, over 2 years. Can we please explain what that is and why those debts were written off? And then page 166, contingent liabilities. Now, one assumes from this, well, it actually says, all claims being contested based on legal advice, highly unlikely that any contingent liability exists. Would you please explain to me what has happened to the project based out of Kenya, where you actually channel donor funds into projects for Eastern Central Africa? I believe you're trying to regain that money because it was misspent. I also believe that you're facing legal action for unpaid bills for a software company. I think that should keep us busy for a while. Thank you.
No, you can just record all the comments and questions raised. You just show them down and then you respond. We've got the Honorable Dujo here.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. Having gone through this first, let me commend the other part of the report, which is the narrative part of it, which is at least giving us the more understanding of what then the entity is doing, and it's more reader friendly. If there's one thing that frustrates of any report, it's a report that is highly technical, so that you find yourself not really knowing what you are doing. And also these books that you are, the books that you are having, I will assume those are some of those. One would appreciate if in some of them you can just, if it's possible, or to just where we can find some of them in the more easy. Where it's quite a challenge is on your own age report. For me, I am not going to be going point by point in asking these questions, but a fundamental question will be that with all these challenges that are here, what is it? Is there a plan? One would have appreciated in the presentation of the report if you would have touched on, because I would assume that you should have looked into some of these things and addressed them. And in coming here, do say that in points this, as it is said in the AG report, this is what has been that way. So that's why my approach on this is that rather than asking question by question, is it possible for you in responding to some of them? Please say that because it's quite a, in terms of the number of them, which it's a reflection of a, what, poor management, which we one is not saying that more negatively, but it's, if you go through the report, you really that you pick that up. I'm not going to try and respond and say, as you have said initially, that because of the load of work, therefore there have been this reinforcement of the office. But generally, it is quite a reflection of a number of challenges which we have with the potential of downplaying some of the good work that you are doing. You'll understand that when people look into the financials and pick up all what is in here, then it closes. But it really depends on how then you a person looks into the broader picture. So that's why I'm saying, in responding rather than saying this, that for me is that please take us through on what are the measures that you have put in place in addressing the challenges in terms of the finances. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Chief.
Sir, I'm just raising my hand at this point in time just to indicate that perhaps we allow the response from the questions that have been posed by my two colleagues, because I do have, for instance, if it's transpired that in this report there are material misrepresentation or errors which may justify revision, then my question may not be relevant. It is on that basis, then, I would suggest that it is said, let there be responses to the questions by the colleagues from my side. I don't know whether the other colleagues have put other questions before I can pose. Depending on their answer, then I'll be able then to pose my questions.
Thank you.
So now I haven't finished.
Oh, thank you.
Just as a matter, I think... the whip has said it mouthful. It's very important to if you would have identified some of these comments from the Auditor General, it would have eased us a lot here, and say you why they are there, and there may be lots of reasons. Well, in my history here, HSRC has always presented very good reports. I'm surprised when I see such a string of difficult questions from the Auditor General, when your office now is even beefed by two other senior persons. It's supposed to be even more efficient to identify some of these difficulties, but instead it's doing the opposite direction. Probably our committee would be best served to know exactly what are the reasons behind the type of performance which is never has never been associated with the organization. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson, and the members who have asked the questions. Indeed, you are correct in asking these questions and are entitled to do that. Let me say to you, first of all, the Deputy Executive Directors were appointed in November, so that was very late, you know, in the year for them to be able to do anything. But the biggest reason why our report is so different, fundamentally different from previous periods, is because we all along were working with the Auditor General team that was the same over a five-year period. And the way we did things were the way that that Auditor General approved it in terms of performance indicators. The new AG, when they came in with a totally new approach to performance monitoring. And that in itself started raising questions on things that were traditionally accepted. We got unqualified audit, there were never matters of emphasis all along. But the new group, the new team from the Auditor General, when they came in, they actually changed the way in which we had to do this. So one of the things that we had to do in response to the question of what are we doing about it, we actually had to revamp the entire approach of preparing a strategic plan. We had to, in line with the new directives that have come out from Treasury this year, and we also had to revamp the performance management system in terms of the annual, you know, a performance plan. So indeed, these challenges that you are raising, which are quite a lot, they actually arise because of the fact that the kind of strategic plan and the annual performance plan that we had, which was not called an annual performance plan before, was a business plan, did not match with the requirements that the AG actually has, because they also have adopted a new approach. So I wouldn't see this performance as something that is a deterioration in terms of our performance, but it's in terms of changing the reporting format that made it clear that we were not compliant with a new approach. So we agreed with the Auditor General that we redo our annual performance plan to be in line with the new new approach, so that next year when we come in to present the report, these issues would not arise any longer. So you're quite right when you say there's a problem, but I'm sure the explanation I've given goes a long way to explaining why we are where we are. The issue of printing a report with the error and that we reprinted, we did not reprint the report. There's no report that has been reprinted. What has happened is that the new printer whom we got through that supply chain management, always a new person that you've got to try, because supply chain management says you must compete. So you always compete and you find someone who's going to print it, and they printed it and there was an error. And when that error was there, we asked the printer to actually print that one page, you know, in the annual report and pasted it into the document. So the report was not reprinted. What was corrected, you know, was that component. But there's also, pardon me? Yeah, it didn't cost us anything, actually, to reprint, because we had to reprint 70 errata pages, and they were actually, you know, printed by the printer, and then they were actually put into the document. So what perhaps took, you know, more of the cost is sitting down and putting in, you know, that page, which we can do in an evening. So, yes, I agree with you that we have missed some of the targets, and I'll go back to those targets so that you can be able to see those targets that we have missed. You are saying that we have missed the multi-year grants. You are quite right.
Do you need any point of clarification?
Just arising from that first and now we are coming to the new all what I think we were interested to find out in terms of those errors, because she also referred to figures that could not tally with change, which were material, and she says it is seemingly consistent for years. So I would like you to zoom into that as well when you're finishing off that first question.
Thank you, Chair. The issue around the error in the annual report is one specific page, page 177, and it's one specific note to the financials. So with regards to this particular annual report, that is the only error in the annual report. And as the CEO has indicated, it pertains to irregular expenditure. So in terms of the figures, we stand by the figures that are indicated in the new note to the financials. So it's only, I'd like to emphasize with your permission, Chair, there's only one error in the annual report that was submitted in this year. And as CEO has indicated,
Just allow him to finish off, then we can come.
The error is on page 177 in the annual report, page 177, and it's the notes at the bottom of that page.
I think the point is that, A, this isn't a printer error, it's a proofreading error. And okay, we accept that you say that it didn't cost a lot to fix, but I mean, this is the third year running that there have been errors in the annual report. There's something wrong with your process. Are the people you're contracting to do this are sloppy, or you're not doing whoever is responsible within the organization for proofreading it to make sure that it's actually correct before it goes to the printer needs some serious talking to, because you can go through this thing and you can find all sorts of errors. And I mean, it's 3 years running, so it's a serial problem.
Thank you, CEO. We acknowledge that the previous process was inadequate and the people who were responsible for those errors no longer work for the HSRC. So we did hold them accountable for the poor performance vis-a-vis the production of the annual report. I think the second point is that we've tightened up the process of managing the annual report. And as the CEO has indicated, one of the constraints is that we have to work with different publishers from year to year. In this particular case, the errors were picked up in terms of the proofreading, and the CD that was produced by the printer was correct. So that CD was correct. The error arose in terms of the printing that was transferred from Cape Town to Pretoria. So essentially, we can say with confidence this year, the error arose out of a process that was internal to the publishers. And as the CEO has indicated, that's one of the challenges that we do have to face. But as the member has indicated, what's really key is the question, are we putting in place measures to make sure that these things do not arise? And I would like to assure the members of the House that process of managing the annual report is being tightened from year to year. This year, there was only one error, which we have tried to correct. It's in a note to the financials. The rest of the annual report is correct, and we will ensure, as instructed by the CEO, that there are no more errors in the annual report. It pertains to one note in the financials. The rest of the annual report is substantively and technically correct.
Thank you very much. I'm on page 177. Which one? Can you be for record purposes so that we correct what we have?
It's note 31. On page 177.
No, not 31. I'm on 31. Which part? Which paragraph? What is it? Or is it an entire note that one is wrong? Must we delete it or what?
No, it's the regular expenditure. If you look at the asterisks of the star there, the bottom, we had included in the 2011 amount is 3.3 million rand, which was uncovered from the forensic investigation conducted. That's the portion that was corrected, because previously it was 3,305 rand.
Point I'm making, what is incorrect on this page?
There are two reports.
There's another one that, okay, all right. So the one that we have is factually and technically correct. That was my worry. Thank you very much. Okay.
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much on this issue of the annual report, because I did pick up the error and I set in motion the process for correction to be done. And unfortunately, the printer disappointed us. But, you know, I did pick it up personally when I reviewed the report. Okay, the second thing maybe I should address now is the unauthorized expenditure. First of all, we have an irregular expenditure, 3.3 million rand of irregular expenditure. And this resulted from a whistleblowing, you know, system that we've set up at the HSRC. And the whistleblowing came up to us around March 2011, indicating that there was a group that was appointed irregularly and paid high amount of money than should have been paid. And for that reason, as a CEO, I had to take action. I appointed a forensic investigation group. They've investigated it. And between April and June, they did all the examination of all the information, interviewed everybody they could, and they came to the conclusion that, yes, there is a problem. And we actually went ahead and charged the chief financial officer. And once that was done, we actually had a hearing, and that hearing concluded that it is true that she did not follow the supply chain management procedures, and consequently we dismissed her from the position. So all these things that the AG indicates insofar as financial is concerned indicates that there was no leadership. It is in reference to this matter. So we have actually taken action to ensure that that is not happening, you know, within the organization. Again, I just want to say we apologize the fact that, you know, this is what happened with our CFO, and we had to dismiss, you know, the CFO. In terms of the 16 million that we have, I want to start by saying that we have indeed identified this to be a problem in the organization, and I'm going to have our acting chief financial officer explain to it as to why we have that 16 million. First of all, let me inform you, there's no money that went to anybody's pocket. So there's no corruption. Let's be clear on that. It's a question of whether supply chain management policies were followed or not. All of this expenditure that is on that document were approved by the bid adjudication committee. That is a supply chain management process. But there are challenges in terms of, you know, approving and condoning them. And of course, we submitted them to Treasury, you know, but I would like our acting chief financial officer take us through that so that there's understanding of what's happening with this 16 million. And I'll come back after that.
Is this the chief, the one who did these things?
Yes.
Or is the acting, this is the one who was dismissed?
She's the one who was dismissed.
Thank you. Just before the 60 million, perhaps to complete this inquiry before I pose my question, when was she dismissed?
Came out when? Last week?
Last week,
Thursday, and we dismissed her on Friday. Thursday? Yeah, Thursday. Yeah. I was off on holiday on that day. Yeah. Thank you.
Because the page 177, the note that we have now corrected that we had two versions, but the version that is before me is the correct one, which I'm comfortable. The asterisk, the note with asterisk one, the amount there is 3,305,000 lei. Now, the Auditor General report, which is on page 133, under other reports, investigation, note number 27. The amount there, the Auditor General says, the investigation uncovered irregular expenditure amounted to 3,305,823.75. Are these two different sums of money, or is there any error?
Chair, I'll answer that question as well as the other questions pertaining to that. If I can just start with that, that was the same amount on the corrected note. It was rounded off, and the AG at that point didn't want to change their report. We pointed it out to them, but they felt that it was too late for them to change their report. Otherwise, the whole report, our annual report, would have been late. We did raise it to them.
Problem.
Yeah.
What must we take? Because as far as Parliament is concerned, our rules, we must rely on the Auditor General's report. Now we are telling us that we must rely on the report from management. Please, can you comfort me? I'm not comfortable.
Chair, I'm stating a fact, and of course the reliance has to be placed on the AG report, but remember the AG approved our financials as well, and all these notes were also approved by the AG, and then the point and when that difference of 800 rands and 23 rands was pointed out, they said it's too late for them to change their report, and they must and we must let the financials go through as it is.
There is also fraud here. And as I understand, fraud is a crime. And to me, therefore, the dismissal of the official is not sufficient.
Chair, through you. At this stage, our legal advisors advise us that fraud has not been proved. They've advised us that this is these are the facts. It was a case of proper procedures not having been followed. It was a dismissible offence, and we were guided by the report of the chairperson with legal counsel, senior counsel.
Well, Chair, to conclude.
Be careful, there is an office behind you.
I'm in order now.
Actually, I wanted myself to ask this question because here there were monies that were improperly used. And I was also expecting, my question was there a handshake? Because sometimes we have noted in this
institutions or entities that a person embezzles funds in a very great way of that, and yet you still find that person when they say is dismissed, they is also given another handshake over and above them. So I wanted to find out, was there a handshake? Secondly, now that there are monies that have been improperly embezzled or misused by that person to the point where that person had to face dismissal, has that person been made to recover, to replenish those monies? That's my question.
Chairperson, we have an insurance against this type of activities. And we are in the process of recovering the money from the insurance. We are not sure whether the individual can actually be able to pay back, you know, that amount of money. It may actually cost us more trying to chase someone who's going to be unemployed to return the money. So we normally take an insurance to cover ourselves against this kind of activities that may occur without our, you know, our knowledge. As in this case, we did not have the knowledge, and that is why the person was found guilty. The presiding officer, whose recommendations are mandatory for the HSRC to implement, required that we give her 3 months notice rather than not give it at all. And by law, it's required that we actually should implement the decision. So she is dismissed right away, and in lieu of that, she's serving 3 months notice not at work. And that is the finding that came in from the advocate who managed this whole thing.
I it's a follow-up question that I'm doing. Sorry? Okay, got it.
A couple of minutes ago, Dr. Shoshana, you said that there was no corruption, that nobody took any money. Now you say there is corruption, that you're going to try and recover the money from this person, that you're insured for this loss. I mean, did she steal money, or was it just, as you said earlier, just inadequate procedures? Because now we have, you know, threats of legal action and getting money back. So I don't know which is the true story you're telling us.
There's no corruption. She didn't steal any money. What we are recovering is the loss of money that has been paid somebody else out there, and we're saying that that money should have never paid those people to do that job because it was irregular. Yeah, that's what I'm saying, that I was responding to him to say that I would not do that because of the fact that, you know, she wouldn't even be able to get the money in the first case, even if you try to do that. She didn't receive it in the first place because the money was paid to the entity that provided the service. It was paid irregularly. That's what it is. It's an irregular spending, not going through supply chain management. That's what it is.
I see. There are more hands than not now.
Not for me.
Honorable Tujua, and then goes.
No, for me, Chair, is what I hope I didn't miss that, was I had to go out to the restroom. Having gone through this experience as the institution, I'm seated here wondering how in the first place a person who has made such a grave mistake was employed. Because this is serious. This is really serious. Now, in moving forward in ensuring that these are corrected, how confident are we to be as the portfolio committee that in the next, moving forward, you are not going to be having such grievous mistakes that have taken place around the issue of procurement and the people that are given that responsibility in the office. Because as we are seated here, many questions are going to arise, and it's going to now deviate us to really into looking to, you know, chair finances by their nature are very emotive. Some of us have been in your shoes, you know, it deviates and the whole, it clouds the whole. So that's why my question is, and I'm not saying people must not ask questions, is that what is it that you are to ensure that this then does not happen again in future? Not only here, but in all the offices that have got a responsibility in ensuring that the integrity of the institution is being protected.
Thank you very much. First of all, let me say that the chief financial officer who was dismissed had been with the organization for 16 years. And throughout all those years, working with her, we had an unqualified audit. Each year of those years that I was at the HSRC and worked with her, we had an unqualified audit. It was an error of judgment on her part. That's what it was. And a costly error in the sense that she ended up losing a job that she had had for a very, very long time. So that in itself should serve as a lesson for other staff at the HSRC that it's important to follow the procedures. It's a deterrent on its own. Secondly, in terms of the SCM procedures, the Auditor General has indicated to us that we have wrong SCM procedures. Our SCM procedures are the same as those of government. And the Auditor General is saying that this is wrong. So we're in the process of rewriting the SCM procedures in such a way that they will be fit for purpose. In other words, they will be appropriate for an organization like ours, which is a research organization, which should not be having these policies that are not congruent with the kind of work that we do. And that's going to reduce some of the problems that we actually have. So I'm just going to move on, if it's okay, to address the issue of the 16 million, if it's okay with you, Chairperson.
Oh, there is another honorable member who is next.
Thank you, sir. Just to conclude this 3-something money, just to indicate that I am in a difficult situation. I hear the leadership from HSRC, and I trust what they are telling me is correct, and I can't query that. On the other hand, I'm bound by legislation, by what the Auditor General is telling me. Unfortunately, there is inconsistency here around this question of investigation, fraud. I'm told fraud. Auditor General says it's fraud. Then the legal advisor from the administration said no, it's irregular. Can I therefore share to you, perhaps this matter be clarified to them, so that we, when we report to Parliament, we are clear. So this inconsistency, in my view, must be cleared. I don't doubt them. They said, well, there's been some error on the part of the Auditor General. If there's something from the Auditor General to confirm that, I'll be comfortable. Otherwise, the Parliament may say, well, I didn't exercise my role. If I accept when, on the basis of what is presented before me, is not consistent. That's the remark I want to make to conclude. Then we can go to 16 million then.
Chairperson,
sorry.
She responded, I just wanted to check if, and my apologies, Chair, you ruled me out of order. Because as I was listening to the gentleman explaining this, he then said there is nothing that the AG said they can't change this this mistake. Now, I want to check through your office, Chair, that is it not going to be important, because I agree with Honorable Nkonyane, that it is putting us in a very difficult situation. It's not going to be important that we get all that being clarified by AG, get a formal response, and it then means they will have to come back, even if it means for 30 seconds, for 30 minutes, unfortunately, because it is really a serious inconsistency, worse on our side as members of Parliament. I'm raising that on the basis of the response that was given on this inconsistency. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, thanks. Let me just respond to this to say that the note that is in the Auditor General's report says possible fraud. It doesn't say fraud. And secondly, there is an investigation that was actually done in terms of, this amount. And the conclusion of the advocate who did this is what matters. And we submitted it back to the Auditor General. So I don't think there is any inconsistency insofar as what the Auditor General says and what it is that we have. The Auditor General was speculating that there is possible fraud. The investigation itself and the report that we have does not indicate that it was fraud. And secondly, the amount that is in question, in our own report of the investigation, indeed is exactly what it is you're saying of 3.8 million. I mean, the 800, rand that's actually missing. We're aware of it, and we have indicated to the Auditor General, and as indicated, they were not in a position to make the change because that would delay the printing of the report, and therefore they have a bigger problem in terms of Parliament not submitting our report on time. But I can assure you that no money actually went somewhere else, was stolen.
I think as Parliament, we need a letter from the Auditor General that is saying exactly what you are saying. That's what can make, we don't want to be part of the mud in which you are because of this problem, and then we also sink there. So it's better that, therefore, the Auditor General makes a proper explanation on that, what the members are asking about, and so we can be able to take the report to Parliament with the irregularities having been explained by the Auditor General. It's not for us to say we had that the Auditor General in fact meant this when there is nothing in writing from the Auditor General. Yeah. So I think we agree on that. So we will be awaiting, therefore, that you must tell the Auditor General that we need a letter of that nature before we can pass on this report to the House. Okay. I think we concluded that. Are we agreed, members? Okay. Right. Was there still issues to respond to? Yeah.
Yeah. It's got a few issues, financial ones. First of all, let me start with the 16 million. The 16 million rand, and as Ms. Shin was referring to, she said that her understanding was that it's 18 million rand. There was, we had working papers amounting to just over 18 million rand of possible irregular expenditure that was incurred as a result of non-adherence to supply chain management processes. Now, I must immediately point out that all of these costs related to the previous financial year, but they were never disclosed as irregular expenditure in the previous financial year. We pointed that out to the Auditor General, and the AG said to us, well, if that is the case, they want to disclose it then as information that belongs to the previous financial year. In other words, 9-10 financial year. And they asked us for supporting documents. We provided them with the supporting documents, and they audited all the documents, and they said they could find supporting documents and audited it up to 16 million, and as such, they will only allow us to disclose what they could audit up to 16 million rand. And that is why it is not in the current financial year disclosed as 16 million, but in the previous financial year. And that was of our own volition that we disclosed that fact to the Auditor General. Otherwise, it could have remained off the books completely, but we wanted to make full disclosure as soon as we discovered that that was an omission in the previous financial year. So that's why the 16 million is disclosed as such, and that is why it's also in the previous year's column. Now, why is it disclosed as irregular expenditure? It's very simple. Well, there's three reasons. The first one is the fact that as a result of the implementation of our new supply chain management policy, we had to go back and look at all our contracts that we have signed and check if they adhere to the SCM policy in light of the PFMA. So about 80% of those contracts have been signed already years ago. And that was those were contracts mainly from our donors, and they clearly were out of alignment with our SCM policies. So, and because of that, it's deemed to be irregular expenditure. So we disclosed it as such, and of course we also informed the ministry that this information, and we took it to the Bid Adjudication Committee, so the Bid Adjudication Committee could then disclose it as such and make sure that that information is monitored, that it has been disclosed in our books properly. And of course some of the contracts related to instances where specific individuals possess specific skills. And it's very difficult, and my CEO was referring to precisely that problem, where because of a strict adherence to the PFMA, we painted ourselves into a corner where we could not go out on three quotations. For example, if you know somebody is an expert on Indigenous Knowledge Management Systems, IKS, it's very difficult to go out on a tender to find three people with the requisite skill. And that's why some of the contracts were deemed to be irregular, because they were deemed not to adhere to our SEM policies. And of course, the third reason was because many of our research activities take place in rural areas, and service providers are very difficult to come by in some of the rural areas where we are conducting research. So you have to use service providers who are there, and you can't find three service providers with the requisite skills, experience, and so forth to help us. So all of these reasons were articulated. We compiled all the documents and, of course, submitted that to the ministry. National Treasury has indicated to us that they are only going to look at the amounts in excess of 500,000 rand, and they will do the condemnation at that level, and of course, below 500,000 rand, the CEO or the board can condone those expenses. I must reiterate that 16 million, it's a previous financial year. So we are in the process of getting the condemnation sorted out. That's the first point regarding the irregular expenditure of the previous financial year. Ms. Shin, you asked the question about travel expenses, and you said it's not reflected anywhere. It is actually reflected in our financial statements. About 3.8 million rand is what we spent last year on travel expenses and subsistence allowance. That's on page, I'm hoping so I must take off my specs, 147, page 147, under administrative expenses. And towards the bottom of that, the second last one, you'll see the travel expenses decreased from the previous financial year from 4.2 million to 3.8 million. Okay? You also asked a question about debtors.
Sorry, can I just think, then why is there a column here that's blank on page 172, which says travel? Why is it blank?
On page 70?
172. And also, while I'm at it, let me just add to that, that while we're looking at that particular page, why there's no reflection of executive bonuses.
Okay. As far as the travel is concerned, that column over, let me just see, where's that heading? Oh, that one. That travel cost over there, that's reimbursable expenses if people travel. And that you reflect there. If we haven't given them reimbursable expenses, we don't reflect the information. Okay? Bonuses normally, we don't reflect, performance bonuses we normally don't reflect in here. And that has been accepted. It's part and parcel of the salary packages.
Chief, I may just clarify. So are you saying here that Dr. Shoshana's salary of 2.1 million includes her bonus?
For that period.
Yeah, for that period.
That's your total salary package, including bonus, performance bonus.
Can I move on to the... there's also a question that you asked about writing off a 4 million of... for bad debts. We didn't write off bad debts. There's actually on page 148, you'll see there's bad debts written off under other operating expenses of 2.2 million, and the previous year it was 1.6 million. Now, bad debts you'll always find in any business, and if something goes wrong and you can't recover your debt, then you have to do the prudent thing and write it off. It's one of the hazards of being in business. However, we don't stop there. We do look at the recoverability prospects of the debt, and we hand it over to our legal people. And even if the debts have been written off, we sometimes are able to recover the debt. So we do take the necessary steps to try and recover the debt, even if it has been written off. But for prudent financial management, we have to do the necessary steps. Otherwise, the Auditor General will not accept our bona fides, and our financials will not be acceptable to them. Okay. You had a question about software issues and the legal claim.
A project with donor funding that went to Africa, particularly to Central and East Africa, which apparently was misspent, and you're trying to reclaim the money from some university there for this misspent funds, and then also... some software apparently that you bought and installed and not paying for. Apparently you have problems with that.
I'll deal with both of them, if you don't mind. The first one, it's still a legal process. We're still trying to recover the funds in Kenya. Okay. So it's still in progress.
Right. I think let us do this. It looks like there are many changes that you are instituting in the HSRC in the light of the new procedures that the AG wants put in place. So. You see the way we have been conducting the exchange of ideas and a review of the report. It there are many things which need to be put in place, and I think it would be fair to you and us to give you a chance to go ahead and put all the things in place, and sometimes early next year you come back and tell us that now we've got these things, we've got all this sorted out, this is how the AG is happy, whatever. But I think that there is not think we can conclude in the way things are now, because we are in the process of trying to respond to what AG wants. When you were working in the older way with the other AG staff. So I'm not talking about your questions. I'm ask your question. I'm talking about the whole system as an entity of the science department. It looks like my only question now would be, why is the approach of this AG only affect you, because many other entities have not been affected who are reporting to us? Why is it only you? Why does it only affect you?
I'm not sure why it's not whether they're being audited by the same office of the AG, because the AG, office is distributed. I mean, some people are audited by particular teams and others are appointed by others. They are audited by others. So I'm not so sure, about that. But what I want to say clearly is that the way in which we have been reporting all these years had been accepted by the team that used to audit us for 5 years. This year is the first year that we are working with a new team from the Auditor General. So we are having to realign the way in which we do our strategic plan and our annual performance plan to speak to each other in such a way that you will not have those 94% of activities that are listed not being in the annual performance plan. We had a sentinel indicator system where you have 9 objectives and 9 indicators that you need to report on. We didn't have to report on every activity that our programs actually did. We didn't have to report them in terms of the performance indicators. But now the new Auditor General team that came in wants us to report those things. So consequently, we had to amend the entire reporting process, which would assist us in terms of meeting the requirements that the AG has indicated.
Sid, my question, so since last week we have been reviewing these annual reports. None of the entities that have come here have told us about the problem of new approach of the Auditor General. So our question now, therefore, is why? Because I have a history with you. You have never... all our reports were fine. Why all of a sudden it's only you and the Auditor General, the new team, but it has not affected other entities. Other entities, they have continued to report, and we had CSIR just now. They didn't complain that there is a new way of reporting in the Auditor General. So their report is fine as usual as before. So
respond. I think that what has happened is National Treasury issued a new framework for reporting by government departments as well as public entities on their performance in pursuance of their strategic plans. That framework was issued in August 2010, and prior to that, we had completed our strategic plan as well as our annual performance plan. It was called a business plan at the time. And when they audited us at the end of the year, they pointed out to us that our strategic plan as well as our business plan need to be aligned to the new framework from National Treasury. We did, and of course, it led to lots of arguments, and of course, they indicated to us the fact that we haven't set proper SMART objectives, and that they were going to audit us, and these were the findings as a result of that. Hence, we are now in the process of revisiting our strategic plan as well as our annual performance plan. in order to make sure that they have the proper SMART objectives and that they are auditable and that we will not have these findings again. Last week we went to the Auditor General for training and they indicated to us how they will be looking at it and making sure that we have the SMART objectives set properly. So there's an intensive program at the moment in order to make sure that we revisit the strategic plan and the annual performance plan. And my colleagues from DST behind me are well aware of those plans, and we are working together to make sure that we don't have these findings again.
In the initial response, the CEO said, which it's why, Chair, I pick up that is why they then had a challenge. You are correct, all other entities. And the CEO said, it has been picked up by AG that how they structure what their accounting or strat plan is in line is, it's more on government, and therefore they will have to change and structure it in essence. So that is why I do think I would have thought the response again, so that we really quite clear. Remember that why we pick up, not deliberate, I want to say to you, you understand, when we listen to the first response and again listen to another response on the same matter, we quickly pick up some little bit of inconsistency. Now, if that is the correct word, now you sit and wonder which exactly is, but you were not coming up front as the CEO said, because that's what I understood, that oh, okay, now that they are found in this problem, it's because their initial structuring of their strat plan was not a correct one, and therefore that is why everything was there. So I hope I understood the CEO correctly. But the second thing, Chair, is I would propose that after the response that we there's another entity that is supposed to respond to come in, and we have, and I'm not downplaying the questions, it's almost more than 3 hours that we have been with you. There's another entity, the last one for today, and I do think that it is quite unfair. But sitting down with this comment, that I hope when you come back in the next time with your annual report, all this, make it easy for us, make it easy for yourselves and easy for us, obviously without putting anything under the carpet, but try to ensure that some of the issues that have been raised, we understand why now there are problems. We hope that in moving forward, you are then going to be able to correct all the issues that have been raised. That's the proposal, Chair. I'm seriously worried about time, and I do think. But the other thing, Chair.
Question number 23,
no,
contingent liabilities is a material omission
order,
of the annual report.
Order, Chair. I did say, Chair. I do think that all of us here, I did say initially, finances by their nature are emotive. And therefore, I don't think that it is really fair for us to really conduct ourselves in this manner. That's the order, Chair, that I'm really appealing. If the question has not been answered, I think there is a better way of reflecting onto that in respecting your office. Thank you, Chair.
No, let's listen. Do you also seek a point of clarification?
No, I'm actually wanting the question answered, and Mr. Pedler was busy answering it when he got interrupted with an awful lot of waffle. Basically, we're talking about question number 23, about the contingent liabilities, and we were talking about the court cases, the legal action being taken against Kenya, some Kenyan university, and also the software thing. Now, you may have an explanation for that. What I'm wanting to know is why they were omitted from the annual report. Why did you neglect to include those legal actions in the annual report, which you're obliged to do under contingent liabilities?
Chair, if I may. Contingent liabilities, you only reflect information in your financials if there is a very reasonable chance that such action is going to be successful against you, or that you have a chance of actually recovering it. At this stage, there is no reasonable chance that we can pin anything on it, so you can't reflect information as such.
In the interest of time, I think now you can follow up. We can't continue now like that. Otherwise, we won't finish, and there are people waiting. You can write a letter to them. They must explain. You have a right to do that as a member of Parliament. Write a letter. If there are any outstanding questions that you think they have to answer, you can write a letter. You can copy me if you like. Sorry? No, no, but it's a question of time now. We don't have the time. Yeah, but I'm not restricting you in asking those questions. You can always get those answers from them. We must write to them, but there's no way now that we can continue. There's an entity. I'm also having a quick meeting now with another minister. I'll ask the whip to chair the next session, but I'll be back in a few minutes. I'm just going here. In another meeting, we have overstayed actually our estimated time. That's why now this meeting coincides with this session. But otherwise, can you respond? You want to respond? That's the last response now.
Okay, I'm going to be brief. The issue that has been raised about the inconsistency between the SEM and the performance monitoring issue, these are two separate issues. I think it's important that we treat them as two separate issues which are not inconsistent. One is the fact of the SCM processes, that the AG has asked us that we're using government SCM processes and that we shouldn't be. We should be setting up our own SCM that is congruent with our work. So that is being done. The issue of the new framework for auditing, he's quite correct because he's the one who interacts with the Auditor General, you know, quite often. He's our representative with the Auditor General. And indeed, there is a new framework that has been developed, you know, by Treasury, and therefore is forcing us to revise the way in which we have been doing this. And that's why we've got more questions now on performance. You never had a report from us coming from the HSRC that addressed the issues of performance monitoring. Performance monitoring is only being audited for the first time this time around. So I do want to indicate that that is part of the reason why the things are the way they are. And finally, I just want to say with regard to the performance monitoring, where we are, yes, in some cases we did not meet the targets, but in some cases we exceeded them, and in some cases we actually met them, and in some cases we're not too far from meeting them. Like, for example, missing out on appointing two postdocs, you know, like the question of African research fellow. African senior researchers, it's not an easy thing. We've never been able to meet this particular target, despite all the efforts that we've been taking. But the good thing is, if we were to look at the trend, you'll see that the trend is going up and up and up. We didn't show you the trend here. And the extra parliamentary income, we missed it by 1 percentage point. It's not like we're so far off in terms of getting the extra parliamentary income. It's the multi-year that hit us very hard, those grants that we get to the donors for over a period of time. It's not a loss of interest of donors. In fact, this year, the money that we obtained from the donors is already more than what? 145 million versus a budget of 140 million, and we have achieved it now even before the end of the year. So the donors have not lost confidence in the work of the HSRC. If anything, they've come in even more strongly in support of the work that we're doing. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. We appreciate giving us the opportunity to answer the questions.
Okay, thank you very much. I think at this juncture, we must call it a day with you, but we will be calling you back to tell us sometimes early next day how far is the progress in abiding by the new regulations and standards, so that we do not want to have the same problem at the end of the year where we find that your systems are still out of path. So it would be better to have another interaction sometimes next year and see how far you have gone in trying to address these issues. It's our duty as Parliament to ensure that you are on track with the procedures of the Auditor General and the Treasurer. Thank you very much. I will ask the last delegation of presenters to come forward, and I'll ask the whip to chair you quickly whilst I go to the minister. That's right. I'll come back quickly. I'll just, it's not going to be long.